cloud.com podcast, episode number 43, with me, Daniel J. McKeown. I've got three iOS apps that I'm going to talk about this episode, and there's some other stuff to discuss for sure. And then I also have some videos and stuff like that. So if you want to see the show notes, go to djmcloud.com and then search for podcast 43 and you'll see the links to stuff like this.
Go down on zone, on his minute zone. Now 2, 3, leave the trip and the morning six. I'm on the phone, I love so bright, so give me more, till I can't stand, get on the phone, like it's no last thing. If you want more, then here I get it. Starships were meant to fly, can't stop and touch the sun. Jump in my hootie hootie hoo, I own that. And they ain't paying my rent this month, I owe that. But be who you want, be who you like, dance on mic, just know when that's right. Twinkle, twinkle, little star. Now everybody around me here say, try, right. Come to money, get your pay, stay. If you a G, you a G, G, G. My name is Miranda, you can call me Miranda. I'm on the floor, I love to dance. Get on the floor. Like it's your last chance, get on the floor. Starships were meant to fly. Hands up and touch the sky. Can't stop, cause we're so high. Let's do this one more time.
Well, that's a singer called Miranda. Her YouTube account is Miranda Sings 08. And I think it's a performance that speaks for itself that you see there. And that's not all you're gonna see that. There's a lot more to Miranda. I also have a link to this video in the show notes. She comments about this current issue.
Forget to subscribe so that you can tune in. Today's vlog topic comes to us from Twitter. At FYadsMichael said Chick-fil-A, so he thinks that should be my vlog topic. So I looked it up and did some research and found out some very scary news. I did not know this, but Chick-fil-A is in charge of who we get to marry. I thought that this right belonged to God, but apparently Chick-fil-A gets to pick. I'm not happy about it, because that means that if I want to marry a really attractive, famous, handsome man, Chick-fil-A might not let me.
No, there's an iOS app that I have just gotten in the last few days, and I've been using, and I paid $5 for it. I think this app is worth the price. I know that right now the price of apps it tends to be pretty low, and people think a lot about spending a few dollars. I looked into this one, but I think this is a really cool app. It's called Launch Center Pro. What it offers is a kind of a launcher for iOS. You can launch a lot of applications, and you can also go to specific tasks. So if you want to launch into the camera on Instagram instead of the front of the app, or if you want to start a new composition in Byword for iOS, you can set up Launch Center Pro to do stuff like that. It maybe in some ways it's in the tradition of there's Mac utilities like Launch Bar and Quicksilver, and there's also the history in Mac OS where, like, in System 7, I remember there being a launcher in the computer that I had that ran System 7, and it was fairly basic, but it was I guess sort of a precursor to the dock. But the idea, you know, was launching, you know, apps quickly, and this is an evolution of that kind of concept. Of course, with iOS, there's the default Springboard interface, what they call just the normal grid of icons, and the dock at the bottom on the normal interface of the iPhone. And then, of course, when you double tap the home button, you can see the recently used apps and launch into any of those, or of course hold one of the apps down for a while, and then you get the opportunity to press the minus button and close that app. But you know, that's the built-in system. What Launch Center Pro offers you is the ability to set up a grid that's just a simple grid. It doesn't have a dock set up. It's only one grid of 3x4, but it can, each of these 12 spots can either be a group or an action. If it's a group, that's the equivalent to a folder. That means that there can be 11 actions in that folder. What you do to launch the ones that are in that, in a group, you hold the area for the group down and then you swipe over to the part of the screen where the lower level folders icons have been arranged, because the interface switches over to that when you hold down the groups button. Well, there's a lot to this app. It allows you to set up your apps to run, and it allows you to customize it in a lot of ways. You can change icons. They have a set of icons that you can use. You can use the colored backgrounds they have. You can use the grayscale icons they have, and they have an interesting selection of icons. Not exhaustive, but very wide ranging, and the app has a lot of different features that are built in. So when you're setting up an action, you'll see the ability to do something like adjust brightness on the fly. There's a built-in flashlight. There are other tools that are built into the app. I recommend checking it out if you know anything like an alternative application launcher or a quick task setup tool or anything like that appeals to you. Now, there's all sorts of edge cases this could appeal to as well. I mean, there's an action that you can set up to dial a phone number. So you could really use this as a secondary phone book for a different social group or a business number, a set of business numbers. And there's a lot of options that Launch Center Pro offers you. Now, discuss the other two iOS apps, because, well, I got going on one, and let's talk about the two others. These are two camera apps, photo imaging apps. What they do is, one of them is called, actually, it's a fisheye app. The actual official name for the thing, I haven't ever known here. Fisheye Pro. And what this one offers is a fisheye where you get a circular image with, like, what look like the sides of lenses. You can actually use pseudo flashes to change what color, but it's not a full frame fisheye. It's actually, you know, one of those circular ones that has the lens sides in there, and they're talking about developing one that's full frame, but you know, that's one of those things you gotta wait till you see it. But it has two modes of a circular fisheye that you can take pictures in real time with. It gives you a real time preview. So I would recommend trying it. When I got it, it was $1. So I think, you know, it's pretty cool for getting those circular fisheye shots. I don't know if, you know, it's going to be able to match the kind of stuff I know it won't be able to match the kind of stuff that you are going to see with, like, a Nikon fisheye lens. But it's definitely a cool thing to use for a camera app if you want to do fisheye stuff. You know, I did fisheye video in one video that I did that starred the birds, and it's actually called Big Parrot Millet Part 1. So you can see a link to it in the show notes, or check it out at pacificpelican.us/podcast. And I have one more iOS app, and you know, I actually it was fairly recently when I did the iOS apps top 25 shootout, and that was podcast number 33. So you could check that out to see a whole range of different iOS apps, because I am talking about them now, but I haven't really discussed these apps, you know, quite as much lately, because, you know, I use a lot of them now. I haven't really even been using newer ones as much, because I used a lot of the ones that I recommend in podcast 33, like, you know, daily or certainly weekly. Another app, the third one that I was going to discuss today, is Popsy Color. That's what it's called. And what it does, it takes two colors and it creates sort of a watercolor image based on one color more on top and the other color more on bottom. And then it has like three focus settings that give you some options. And you can make these, I don't know, like simple watercolor print looking images. I don't know if that's the right way to describe them, but I think that, you know, it can be kind of cool, especially if you have cool subject matter. So the podcast artwork for this episode is going to have my parakeet bell on it, but it's been run through that Popsy Color app, so you'll be able to see what the app can do when you look at the artwork for the show. Now, that's actually assuming that you are looking at the artwork for the show, I mean, maybe, you know, you can go to the website, of course, and see it. But maybe your podcatcher, if you're listening, you know, just to the audio, is just displaying the general podcast artwork, which is just, you know, it just has right now it just says djmcloud.com on it, and it's based on a picture I took of Stonehenge back in 1999. So I mean, that's a really cool artwork, but you often with a lot of podcasts don't see the recent podcast artwork. And there are many podcasts that just use the same artwork, at least for a while. You may change it once in a while. There's other podcasts that will change artwork per song. I guess that's probably not, maybe that's not as much of a trend as it was before, but, you know, there's also podcasts that'll have artwork that's centered around some sort of theme in the show, or maybe it's just, you know, cool artwork, or, you know, it has some probably connection to the people involved in the show. Maybe people snap a photo of themselves recording the podcast. But, you know, I mean, that's kind of cool. And if podcatchers would support that a little more, that'd be kind of cool. But whatever. It's not really a big deal. But, you know, speaking of podcatchers, now, a lot of geeks will use apps that I've discussed before, like Downcast or Instacast or something. And those are cool, but I think, you know, with a lot of typical users, and there's a lot of, you know, general users that maybe aren't into computers as much, but they like using their iPhone or iPad. If you want to tell people about the show, you can tell people about this app as well, and then that way you can show people how to find a show by searching for DJM Cloud and subscribing to the podcast, and then they can search for other stuff they want. They can subscribe and unsubscribe stuff. But the Apple Podcasts app is free, so you could, you know, you could tell them to buy Downcast or Instacast. You could have them buy one of those apps, but the cool thing about the Apple one is it's free. I was looking at the reviews recently, and they're really not that flattering for it. There's a lot of complaints, and I understand, like, it was getting really crashy with me, and I uninstalled it and reinstalled it, and it's actually been fairly stable. But I think, you know, there's a lot of debate. Is this Apple pushing podcasts off somewhere, or is this a chance for the platform to reach a wide mainstream audience just using the iTunes catalog and a lot, you know, stuff like that? Or, you know, I'm not really sure where the podcasters are looking for growth. You know, say I think the podcatcher market is a specialized market, and I think that maybe apps like Stitcher and stuff like that have a slightly broader appeal. But, you know, I think if Apple were to promote their podcast app a little bit, that would probably be good for, you know, podcasters. But for now, you know, if you can tell people about the show, and then you can also, you know, go to their app store and search for the podcast app, and then show them that it's free, and then download it, and then, you know, after that, you can just, you know, you can subscribe to this podcast, and then, you know, expand the listener base. So, you know, thanks for helping us, you know, get the listening base broader than you and, you know, a few dozen other people. We'll be right back. Operation Northwoods. Back in 1962 or so, President John Kennedy had to stop and had to refuse to put into place a plan for there to be attacks on American targets. State-sponsored terror. In 1963, John Kennedy became the only president in the last 100 years to be assassinated.
Filthy. Filthy dreamer. Where do they dream up this stuff? They're filthy. They're animals. That's what the Bible says.
Like an animal.
Fire slab of ribs.
Why are they talking about me?
I can hear them.
Jesse, nobody's talking about you.
I hear them.
Jesse, nobody's talking about you.
Like an animal.
I know what you're planning to do. You think I'm stupid or something?
Jesse, nobody thinks you're stupid.
Shut up! I know what you're planning to do.
Like an animal.
People begin to say, we trust God. In God we trust. Read the back of the book. We win. This is our time. It is our time to rise up and overcome all that the devil has been trying to do to destroy this nation with progressive socialism for over 115 years.
Hey, Jesse, come on, let's see what you're trying to go high on a little thing like me. Would you like to go to see this? It's dust. This is a show. So we can go to the Jews.
How much is it?
This is
me. The woman at the door, she was like, you look like a woman on a mission. And I looked around for a second to see if she was talking to somebody else, and then I realized she was talking to me. And I said, no, not really. I've come here and I've never been in the store, so that's why I'm here. But thinking about it a little later, I was a little bit sad that what she said was not true, because I felt like I needed to have a mission.
Like
that kind of store is the kind of place you go when you have a mission, when
like
you are on a scavenger hunt that you set for yourself. I'll admit, sometimes antique stores freak me out a little bit because I get afraid that I'll get lost in their labyrinths because they have all these rooms and you think it ends here, but then there's another room and it connects to this one, but it doesn't to this one, and this one has a bear in it. It really did. There was like a taxidermied, a tiny taxidermied polar bear in one of the rooms, which I briefly contemplated buying.
Let's get
but, you know, what are you going to do with that? But that's how I feel about everything in these kinds of stores. You look at it and you go, that's really odd or interesting. Why the heck would anyone need that ever? Like a replica of one of the decks of the Titanic with two people leaning over the rails to hang on your wall. Or a handmade wooden goose with no discernible purpose, but it has a string around its neck and a tag that says its name is Jason. Or the very attractive glowing lawn gnome.
Aren't you a swan? Yeah. There you go. It's my very first interview of myself.
You want to speak pyramid?
Leave comments below what you want my next vlog topic to be. Okay, so now, fan of hate mail of the day. Fan
like an animal.
Just to point something out. Your eyebrows look like two spermatozoids.
You want some big
pyramid? Thank you very much. I love dinosaurs, so. Alright, now hate mail. How come you don't really see that, you beep beep, and you're a beep beep?
eyes fixated on the garage, or whatever that might be, the Bumblebee really salt under. Shaker, or so, the deluxe Coca-Cola plastic bottle cap trading card.
Make sure you tell me how much you love me on the comments.
Which is a thing I just made up. Part of me even kind of wanted to pocket something and see if anybody would notice if it was gone.
Well, Jessica and I are gonna get a new TV soon. It's become an inevitability because we still have an old Sony Trinitron, so the thing needs to be replaced. And so, you know, we've been looking at stores, even looking, you know, online, Amazon, and places, and you know, it's really hard for me to get that interested in, you know, in buying a new TV. I don't know. I have a PlayStation 3, and I would be able to enjoy, you know, stuff in better resolution on games, but I don't know. I guess I don't really watch TV that much at all. And you know, I can watch video on the iMac or the MacBook Pro, and so I don't really use the TV much. Jessica uses it a little, but we will get a new one so I can play, you know, games on it, and she can play, you know, games with me sometimes, and then occasionally there's different stuff that each of us will watch. You know, for a long time we've just been like, you know,
TV's fine, we don't need to change it, it's fine.
But you know, like, eventually you've got to, you know, you got to make changes. So, you know, we were looking at these different brands, and I guess a lot of people say that Samsung TVs are good, but I don't think I could be talked into Samsung one. You know, for some reason I like the way the LG and the Sony ones looked in the store, and I think I'm somewhat aware of the showroom issues and how brightness and color issues can be distorted, and there's all the lighting and the, you know, the comparison of different sets that can distort a lot of judgment. And you know, I'm even aware of that. I like that. Well, it looked like we could get a pretty good quality LG, you know, for a reasonable price, because it seems like there's going to be more stuff coming along. Like maybe Apple will release their own TV, maybe not, but you know, I think we might get something that is 1080p, good quality screen, like LED backlit. But I'm interested in like an OLED screen, and I guess that or something very like, you know, next generation. We have too much light in the front room coming in to really make plasma reasonable. So I guess an LED backlit LCD is pretty much the standard, and I think that's basically the way that this IMAX screen is, and you know, the 27-inch IMAX, you know, it's really good. So I guess a TV screen with similar technology will be pretty cool. But, you know, if you have any feedback for the show, or if you have any good ideas about what TV we should get, you know, send us some feedback. DJMCloud@sf3am.com. Thank you. DJMCloud.com podcast, episode number 43. It's August 9th, 2012. I have one more iOS app that I was going to mention. This one is called iReddit. And it's just the official iOS app for the website Reddit. Now, Reddit is an aggregator of content. It has a lot of different parts of the site, or so-called subreddits, and it aggregates links. So it's where people submit links to stories, and then people can comment on those links, and then people can click on the links and read the stories. And the iReddit app is a way to look at the stories on Reddit through an iOS interface, through an app. And you can, if you want, you can get an account at Reddit, and then you know that's free. And then also, the iReddit app, I think it was free when I downloaded it. These allow you, when you get the account, to customize the content you get. So you can decide what subreddits you want to get content from on your front page. And the app can be used to, you know, read the site, and then read the links, and then also you can take the links and send them to Instapaper. Now, I don't usually use Instapaper. I use Pocket because it works well for what I want to do, and it has a good API setup. It really makes a difference because I use IFTTT, a site that I've mentioned before, to do a transfer. Well, every time that I read every time I'm finished reading an article on Pocket, the IFTTT sends a message to take the URL of that and send it to ZooTool. So every time that I mark a story read on Pocket, it becomes a bookmark on ZooTool. Now, Instapaper doesn't offer, I guess, the kind of access that's necessary, or anyway, it's not available in IFTTT on their website. I'm glad to use Pocket for whenever I'm going through Reader, or when I'm using Chrome on the desktop, or when I'm, using when I'm using Tweetbot. I have those set up so that I can use my ReadLater service, as Pocket. But I got Instapaper for free because it was the app they were giving away at Starbucks, and Jessica and I were at Starbucks, so I got the app, and I downloaded it, because it was free. Because normally Instapaper, I think, is $5, and I really didn't see the point of paying for that when I was already very satisfied with what I could do with Pocket. And I'd used the Readability app, too, in the past, but I'd kind of settled on using Pocket. But then Jessica and I both got the cards for the free app of the week at Starbucks, and it was Instapaper that week. And so we both got it installed. And I hadn't really used Instapaper, but then Reddit only offers Instapaper, or I guess its own internal setup, as a ReadLater service. So that's what I'm using Instapaper for now. And some of these things I'm talking about actually are part of the information that goes into a flowchart that I did. The last episode, I talked about the flowchart that I had in mind about how information moves around the web. And now I actually have made the flowchart. So I guess what it indicates is how information that I create, consume, and share moves around the web. And I think the key apps, it kind of has the key apps in larger type, and then less significant apps in the in smaller type. So it has Chrome Reader, which is a Google Reader client, Pocket and ZooTool, and Twitter in big letters, and Tweetbot, you know, linked with Twitter. And then a lot of other important stuff with fairly big type, like Drafts, one of my favorite iOS text editing app, and Evernote, and stuff like that. But, you know, what the chart does is it has all these services I use, but then it has arrows. And the arrows indicate the flow of information. So, for example, Chrome has arrows. Chrome has an arrow to Pocket, and that arrow is from Chrome to Pocket because I have a Chrome extension that allows me to save pages that I'm looking at to Pocket so that I can view them later at getpocket.com when I'm logged in or through the Pocket app. Because, you know, after all, that's, you know, what the service offers. So I have the ability to get, you know, the information from Chrome to Pocket. So that's why the arrow is like that. Whereas with Chrome for iOS, I have the arrow going both ways to Chrome. Well, so that's, you know, Chrome desktop. Because the way that you can log in to Chrome on your iOS device and your Mac, and then it will allow you to view what tabs you have open on different machines. I think that's a pretty cool feature that Google has added, you know, recently to Chrome for iOS. And, you know, Gmail for iOS not that long ago got an update that allows it to download pictures. Now, granted, that's an app that I was surprised wasn't available earlier. And, I mean, that's a feature that, you know, I was surprised it didn't have earlier. But then I got into the you know, mail app when I needed to and download pictures. But now they've added the ability to download photos. So if you get sent a photo and you want to put it on your photo roll, or, you know, even if you send a photo yourself and you're trying to transfer it to your photo roll, now the Gmail app supports that along with push notifications and stuff. Because, well, of course, you know, the Sparrow issue is a big thing where Google bought it out. And, you know, a lot of people are dissatisfied with the slow progress of Mail app, you know, for iOS. But, you know, I really do think the Gmail app is really cool, and I've seen it improving. So I'm one of the maybe smaller handful of people that's using it in iOS. Well, it appears the Windows 8 backlash is picking up steam. You know, I talked to it in a previous episode. It was an episode called 10.1. I discussed that. Well, I discussed my impressions of Windows 8 in that I think Windows 8 looks stupid. And a lot of people are joining the backlash and complaining that Windows 8 isn't going to work well for a lot of existing users because it has the new interface that they, until recently, were calling Metro-style interface, and it has all those boxes. It's sort of like widgets, but it's designed for touch screens, and Microsoft is going to put out, well, they've claimed that they're going to put out products that showcase Windows 8, their Surface products that they've announced, but they haven't put up for sale yet. They're going to have to demonstrate a need for a touchscreen and get a lot of new buyers if they want Windows 8 to be successful, because the reviews are very critical about it. One of the things people are saying is that if you have to use a mouse with the interface that's intended for touch, you have to make too many sweeping mouse movements. It's just a different kind of design style that doesn't work well. And then there's stuff where there's people in the industry that really wouldn't seem to you wouldn't know if they were looking at the issue from the perspective of someone that doesn't want Windows to change much, or I'm not really sure, but I definitely still think they're making a lot of valid points. There's this guy named Sasha Segan for PCMag.com. You can see a link in the show notes. He's saying, quote, Microsoft's steadfast refusal to talk in depth about Windows RT has made me and everyone else I know skeptical about the OS in the first place. Unquote. And he goes on to talk about a lot of the specifics and talks about Windows RT, which is going to be a version of Windows 8 that does not allow the user to go to an old, more start button style desktop interface. It's going to be a real challenge for Microsoft to get people to adopt their idea for a new operating system. But it doesn't really matter to me and for my computing, because I am, using two Macs, and I also have a Linux box I don't use too much, and of course my iPhone. So it isn't a much of an issue to me, but for people that are PC buyers, I don't really know what they're going to do, and I don't know if they're going to want to touch their screen all the time, if it's like a everyday office computer. I think a lot of Mac users dislike the idea of having a touchscreen desktop computer or laptop computer, and think that, just an improvement in the current OS X is what is needed the most. And I want to see for myself if there have been improvements in OS X, so I'm going to put them online on one or both of my machines sometime soon, so I'll have to bring that up and discuss it actually from the point of view of knowing what is actually going on with the with the new operating system instead of just reading about it. Thank you. seems to allow people to voice their views, whether they think something is good or bad, very easily. But as people who have run communities and blogs and stuff like that can tell you, it seems like there can be a broad range of interested and satisfied readers, but the people that will leave comments are certainly weighted heavily toward people that are complaining or trolling or whatever. And trolling, of course, is a meaningless word. But the people that are leaving negative comments, they seem to have, you know, they have an inordinate voice on the web. And what is the real reason for that? Is there any clear social science on that issue? I think that it's a complex set of causes, but if you really consider, if you want to reduce it to just one or two issues, I really think that the din of feedback and attitude that people get is something that it does confront people early in their development. For example, if you're posting photos that you took, maybe you're just starting out with your camera, but you know, people are going to look at it often, I think, by unfair or impossible standards for new publishers, but it's certainly by standards that are difficult and highly critical and are arbitrary, which I guess is even worse. And I think that people need to develop their own aesthetic and develop confidence in their own abilities, and the internet isn't really there to do that. The internet is to distribute it, maybe when you have it packaged effectively in a way that represents what you're doing. I've kind of speculated lately about what the future of writing will be in the age of voice dictation. I think that the experience of using the voice dictation on the iPhone 4S really has made me question whether there will be a kind of human and machine combine that will be the most effective and most interesting writer in the future. Maybe it's just the interesting coincidences that happen, but sometimes the mishearings even of the stuff I say will leave a word in there that actually just seems sort of cool. You know, it may not make perfect sense, or of course there are sometimes, you know, coincidences being what they are, that the word actually makes incredible sense, and all it really owes its existence to is the mistranscription of a machine, but still based on the output of the human.
Part of their long history, the Beta Israel ruled their own independent kingdom in the Simeon Mountains of Gondar. Their oral history recounts the deeds of kings and queens, many of whom bore the names of Gideon or Yudit. 1,000 years ago, one particularly fierce warrior queen, Yudit, conquered a large part of the Aksum
Empire.
I'm here
in Jerusalem, across from the Knesset, where hundreds of Ethiopians are protesting against what they call racism and discrimination in Israeli society. Their anger peaked about 2 weeks ago.
They were finally overcome in the 15th century, and most of their written records were burned. Since then, they have been subject to discrimination and increasing anti-Semitism.
They were in league with the devil, that they could turn themselves into hyenas at night and raid non-Jewish villages, cast spells on other people's crops or children. And in fact, during all the years, I was going back and forth to Ethiopia in the 80s.
You've been listening to the DJMCloud.com podcast with me, Daniel J. McKeown. This has been episode number 43. If you want to see the links, if you want to see other episodes, you know, we have the whole archives, not just the most recent ones like you see in iTunes. You can see that at the website, DJMCloud.com.
It's like a scary game.
Well, if you want to hear some more music that I've made and also that I've made with Jessica, you can check out my two music sites, blogs.sf3am.com/neener and screambird.djmcloud.com. And also check out pacificpelican.us. Thank you.